Srila Prabhupada describes the goddess of fortune as purport to verse 21. In the Brahma Samhita, it is stated that the Supreme Lord, Govinda, is always served in his abode by many, many millions of goddesses of fortune. Lakshmi Sahasra Sata Sambrahma Sevyamanam, Brahma Samhita 5:29. These millions and trillions of goddesses of fortune reside in the Vaikuntha planets, are not exactly consorts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but are the wives of the devotees of the Lord and also engage in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is stated here that in the Vaikuntha planets, the houses are made of marble. Similarly, in the Brahma Samhita, it is stated that the ground in the Vaikuntha planets is made of touchstone. Thus, there is no need to sweep the stone in Vaikuntha, for there is hardly any dust on it. But still, in order to satisfy the Lord, the ladies there always engage in dusting the marble walls. Why? The reason is that they are eager to achieve the grace of the Lord by doing so. It is also stated here in the Vaikuntha planets, the goddesses of fortune are faultless. Generally, the goddesses of fortune does not remain steady in one place. Her name is Chanchala, which means one who is not steady. We find, therefore, that a man who is very rich may become the poorest of the poor. Another example is Ravana. Ravana took away Lakshmi, Sitaji, to his kingdom, and instead of being happy by the grace of Lakshmi, his family and his kingdom were vanquished. Thus, Lakshmi in the house of Ravana is chanchala, or unsteady. Men of Ravana's class want Lakshmi only, without her husband, Narayana. Therefore, they become unsteady due to Lakshmiji. Materialistic persons find fault on the part of Lakshmiji. But in Vaikuntha, Lakshmiji is fixed in the service of the Lord. In spite of her being the goddess of fortune, she cannot be happy without the grace of the Lord. Even the goddesses of fortune need the Lord's grace in order to be happy. Yet, in the material world, even Brahma, the highest creating being, seeks the favor of Lakshmi for happiness. Right. So you have this element that Lakshmiji, she's always engaged in the Lord's service. That's steady. Later it will be described how Lakshmiji is stable at the Lord's lotus feet. Why she's attracted is because he's always engaged in the service of the devotees. Right? And that's the unique element that therefore Lakshmi always stays with Narayana.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's the whole principle is service is the element that makes everything prosperous. Prosperity is generated because of service. Right? So if there's that service, there's that affection, these elements are there, then we find everything works very nicely. Right? So that's the whole secret is here, is that because one's wondering why she's always with him. It's because he's serving the devotees. So that means if one is serving Krishna, the same principle, then she will always take care of the devotees. Right? But the main principle is because you're connected to him, it works. She's connected to him. So that's the common principle. Right? Then you have the other common principle of service being rendered. Right? So connection to the Lord in service, That's what's going to make everything work properly. Nothing else is going to work. Of course, you know, I don't think you could have a, you know, how do you call it, one of these success seminars and explain this and have people, you know, be willing to part with $2,000 to hear that. You know, they want something a little bit more.
And
yes.
And they will say, well, you know, if this is the case, then we would see that all the devotees are filthy, stinky rich, and all the materialists are poor. But that's not the case.
Oh, okay. But the thing is she's chanchala with those materialists. Does it stay? Do we hear of people, like, do we hear of people that they're rich and at the end of your life they're still rich?
Sometimes.
Yeah, but it's not very often, isn't it? Generally, the families that are like that, they on purpose, you don't hear about them.
Yes.
Because the point is somebody gets money and then loses it, nobody really gets that envious. But somebody's had money, you know, for the last 400 years, people get envious,
yes.
Right? So you just don't talk about it. Right, so it's very rare. But what does that mean? That means that piety has been performed.
Yes.
You know, because we understand karma and that. And devotees, it's just a matter of, they're as rich as is useful for their personal development. If being
yes.
more rich is good, it'll be there. If it's not good, it won't be there.
So Lakshmi is also
so therefore we're the chanchala one.
Yes.
Because you know, we're chanchala, and our service sort of is there. When it's not, it's not. Because when we think about for ourselves, that means that she goes away. You know, that's that's the feminine principle. When you want, it goes away. When you don't want, it's there.
Yeah. So Lakshmiji is personal with the devotees.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily just about...
No, no. See, we use the karma aspect just to explain things, but everything's personal.
Yes.
That's actually how things are working. Yeah.
We used to always think that Lakshmi is one. Here it's the hundreds and salvias of Lakshmis for the wives of the presidents of Vaikuntha. Are they also wearing all that kind of riches?
Are they also rich?
No, they are probably, but do they award this the same to those who worship Narayan? Or whoever worship Lakshmi.
Here it's slightly different, but it's because they're in the service of Lakshmi, therefore their act is Lakshmi. Like, so just like in the house, when the wife is performing all the duties nicely, the husband nicely, everything's going nicely, then Manu says she's known as Griha Lakshmi. Lakshmi of the house. Because that's what makes everything inspired. When things are nice in the house, then the men are very inspired to go out and work very hard to make lots of money. Right? Does that make sense? So it's there's a principle there at work, like that. So, but you have the original goddess of fortune, who's Narayan's consort. That's why he says they're not exactly the Lord's consort. They do all the things to please him, but they're actually the consorts of the devotees, like that. And so then, yeah. So they're just busy trying to do something, but they're stable in service to Krishna. That's the principle. Because with others, they're not stable. You know? That's the thing. Does that work? Okay. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur confirms in his purport to verse 21 and 22 that even Goddess Lakshmi is engaged in service. It goes without saying that everyone in Vaikuntha is blissful in serving the Lord. Even Lakshmi is engaged in service there. This is described in two verses. She has the highest form of beauty and makes sounds with her footbells by her graceful gait in the Lord's house, having crystal walls and gold embellishments to increase the beauty. Okay, so none of these little plaster designs and stuff. It's just done with gold. Right? Crystal walls, right? So it's its own room, but you can see straight through. Yeah, that's nice. So that means you could be sitting in your room, having a conversation, you don't want to understand that, but at the same time seeing what's going on in the house.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Reflected on the polished wall, she seems to be cleaning with a broom, though she actually holds a lotus in her extended hand. or she appears to be a maidservant who does the cleaning, but she is without fault. Right? So it's not that she's a maidservant because she doesn't have the piety to do something else. Mm. So that makes sense. In the material world, someone ends up as a maidservant basically because they don't have the piety to be, you know, the one with the maidservants.
Yeah.
You understand? Yeah. But here, the element of maidservant is not a fault. It's just the natural aspect of service. So someone who is in that category, then they take care. Does that make sense? Yeah. The lotus represents other objects also that she holds in her hand. Her glory should not be diminished by her appearance. Others take great effort to gain her mercy. Having described the bhakti expressed in her service, he now describes her bhakti expressed through Archana, which is similar to that of sadhakas. She takes her morning bath in order to worship Narayana, her lord, with Tulsi in a grove situated with Nishre Yashavana, in a pond filled with water similar to nectar. First, however, in order to wash her face, she sits on the steps of the bank of the pond and gazes at her face with beautiful locks, swalakam, and nose reflected in the water. She thinks that it is the leftovers from being kissed by the Lord. Or, seeing her face reflected in the water, mixed with the reflection of the blue lotus, she begins to think that her face is being kissed by the Lord. Right, so it's always in connection to the Lord, right? In these aspects. Does that make sense? So this, there's just a side. Is these aspects, these conjugal aspects, it's there with Lakshmi, but in a very formal way, right? So it's not just in Braja with Krishna and the gopis that we have these kind of flavors. Right? You see in Vaikuntha with Lakshmi, you see in Dwarka with the queens, and you see in Vrindavan. It's just it becomes more and more sweet, that's all. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Verses 23 to 25. Brahma glorifies Vaikuntha. Brahmadev glorifies Vaikuntha and hearing topics about Vaikuntha. One should not give up hearing these topics. Human birth is especially sought after to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And one can achieve the supreme abode simply by becoming ecstatic when hearing the glories of the Lord. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in the next three verses, Lord Brahma described three types of persons. Those who are unqualified to enter Vaikuntha planets, devotees with material desires, and pure devotees. Brahma said, "It is very much regrettable that unfortunate people do not discuss the description of the Vaikuntha planets, but engage in topics which are unworthy to hear and which bewilder one's intelligence. Those who give up the topics of Vaikuntha and take to talk of the material world are thrown into the darkest region of ignorance. The human form of life is of such importance that we also desire to have such life. For in the human form one can attain perfect religious truth and knowledge. If one in this human form of life does not understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his abode, it is to be understood that he is very much affected by the influence of external nature." So if someone's not interested in understanding the Godhead, that means they're very much affected by the modes. So people think, no, I'm intelligent, I'm thoughtful, I'm reasonable, that's why I'm not interested. No, it's just they don't have the piety. They're too entangled in the modes. But you just cover that. It's just like when you do something wrong, you always try to cover it. There's some excuse, some reason. So because they're not going to find fault in themselves, naturally then they'll fault something else. Right? So just say, oh, it's not intelligent, it's not reasonable, it's not... You know, I'm a practical person, right? So this is what goes on, and then that way they, you see? Yeah, means that they lose out. So that's why then it said it's causeless mercy, because when the devotees preach, then they're not interested, but they come in contact with Krishna consciousness. And so by coming in contact on a regular basis, they get agyata sukriti.
Yes.
Right? That builds up to one time they'll have faith. Yes. So you know, after so many years of watching the Harinam party walk by, go by, one day they just, you know, what's going on? And they walk up to the devotees, what's happening? Right? So that means the Agyata Sukriti is built up. So that's the causeless mercy. Does that make sense? Because that means you're exposing them to devotional service. That's what devotees do. Right? It may be socially not acceptable, but it's one of the elements of pure unalloyed devotion that you kind of have to get used to. Right? Is it socially okay for the gopis to walk out on their families and go meet Krishna in the middle of the night out in the forest? No. So, therefore, get used to it. All this thing, no, we have to fit in, we have to do everything, not disturb anybody. It doesn't matter what you do, someone's going to be disturbed.
They're already disturbed,
yeah. So this idea is that, no, we'll fit in perfectly. Where does this fit in perfectly? And then the other thing, who wants to fit in?
Exactly.
Who wants to fit in perfectly? You know what I'm saying? Leaders don't fit in perfectly. You know? So this whole idea is that means sheep. Now they fit in perfectly. One sheep goes over the fence, they all go over the fence. Like that. That's the thing. You have a huge herd of sheep, you need two dogs. That's it. That's two. And they manage the whole thing. Why? Because they all fit in. Right? So that's the interesting thing. So this idea, oh, we have to fit, what is that? Where does that come from? Brahmins don't fit in, Kshatriyas don't fit in, Vaishyas don't fit in.
Who's left?
We'll leave it up to you to connect the dots. You understand? So this is not leadership mentality. Though we're always talking leadership and leadership this and that, at the same time we're just talking straight up front non-leadership. How does this work? So that's the whole thing, is that. And then it's just you get some kind of education, and then you try to cover it by you're so intelligent and so sophisticated. But as the Brahma points out, they're just unfortunate. That's all. They're just covered by the mode so much they can't see reality. But at the same time as they think, oh, we're so special. At the same time, we fit in.
Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, that's a, you know, you got to get that balance. You know,
so. Unique in exactly the same way,
yes,
as everybody else.
Yes. Yeah. Unique, but exactly the same. Persons whose bodily features change in ecstasy, and who breathe heavily and perspire due to hearing the glories of the Lord, are promoted to the kingdom of God. Okay, so that puts us somewhere in between these two. Right?
Yeah, we're definitely.
Yeah, it's not that we don't want to hear, and it's not that we just hear this and we're in ecstasy. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Even though they do not care for meditation and other austerities, right? So they're not interested in all these things that seem very, very spiritual. You know, sitting and doing your meditation, doing austerities. They're just interested in hearing the Lord. They're the ones qualified, they're the ones that get promoted. The kingdom of God is above the material universes and is desired by Brahma and other demigods. 22-25. Srila Prabhupada's purport to verses 23 and 24 describes those who are unqualified to enter Vaikuntha planets. The most unfortunate persons are the impersonalists, who cannot understand the transcendental variegatedness of the spiritual world. They are afraid to talk about the beauty of the Vaikuntha planets because they think that variegatedness must be material. Such impersonalists think that the spiritual world is completely void. And it's just like, okay, whatever we do, oh, that's just Indian.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Where is that coming from? That's just materialistic. That's not philosophy.
No.
That's not intelligence. That's not thoughtfulness. That's just pure mundanity. Because what Krishna does and what the Acharyas do, then if people follow it as a culture, even though they may be materialistic, but its basis is not. It's coming from the spiritual world. Right? The Vedas is Krishna's breathing. Then how is it material?
Yeah.
How is it India? Just India happens to be the only place left that still follows it.
Yeah.
Right? And Prabhupada said, as time goes, it'll come down to only UP will be Bharat. You know, like that. Is that, you know, so that's going on. So that's the point, is there can't be all this variegated because it's material. And then once you make it material, then of course I'm going to follow my own, you know, my own materialism from my own, you know, mother or fatherland, wherever you happen to be from. You know? Is that what I said? Yeah, so that's such impersonalists think that the spiritual world is completely void, or in other words, that there is no variegatedness. This mentality is described here as kuta kata mati gni, intelligence bewildered by unworthy words. Right? So, because it doesn't have variegatedness, then what do? I project my variegatedness there.
Yes.
You know, the thing about, you know, well, you know, but if the spiritual world is everything's there, then, you know, why can't my diet be over there? Why can't I wear my clothes from here over there? You know, why can't I live my you know, Western lifestyle there? Right? But how do you do that unless there's nothing there? You know, it's like the, how do you call it, franchise food? They have a system where they take out all the flavor and then put in the flavor, so it gets, doesn't matter where you are in the world, it always has the same flavor. You ever heard of this? No, it's some far out, so I don't know how they do it, but that's what they do. Otherwise, it'll be different.
Yeah, we don't want that.
Yeah, so that's the whole thing. Is you remove the variegatedness of the spiritual world, then I can impose my own there. But it all sounds like very nice, intelligent, practical, you know, how you say, thoughtful, unsentimental, you know, thinking. It's just impersonalism. Does it make sense?
Yes.
Like that.
Yes.
Sad.
Yeah.
You know. And then there's the hardcore impersonalist. That's another thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Softcore impersonalism. Okay. The philosophies of voidness and of the impersonal situation of the spiritual world are condemned here because they bewilder one's intelligence, right? Because then people don't know what's right or wrong. Because it's all about bewildering. Because if I can bewilder, then I can come up with something new.
I can do whatever I want.
Yeah, I can do what I want. Because then I can, like for the Mayavadis, I can be God.
Yeah.
Right? First you have to bewilder. Because unless you, it's just like Maya. First she covers, then she throws.
Yes.
She doesn't cover. How can she come up with something different? So unless you bewilder, how do you come up with something as stupid as impersonal or voidist philosophy? Right? Because it doesn't make sense. But once you've covered, you've bewildered, then it sounds okay.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes. Many times the presentation of the modern academy is not giving a conclusion, but just creating doubt in something.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's the first thing is create doubt. Because they feel if you have doubt, then it's real. In other words, real is mundane. If there's something more ideal, then you know, then I'd have to work. Because the activity should be based on an ideal. If there's no ideal, I don't have to do anything. Ultimately,
they're very fond of this concept, critical thinking.
Critical thinking, yeah, but they don't apply it on their own academy.
No. Exactly.
Yeah, it's just everything. Yeah. It's always called the critical. What is it? The manuscript that was. It's the critical version or something.
Mm.
You know, there's the one that they all accept that you can critically use this. Yeah, critical edition. Because other ones, it may be too obvious.
Mm.
You know, it's like Prabhupada's books would not be the critical edition.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, they've got other ones that then they can play with.
Yeah.
Like that. You know, verses missing from here, this one's from... Like you see in the notes, like a lot of times the academics, when you have a manuscript, most of the notes are just, well, in this edition, then this word is used, but in this one, that's used, and this could mean this, and that could mean... That's all they do.
Yeah.
They don't really give something solid.
Mm-hmm.
Like that.
Yeah.
So that's the sad thing. And the worst part is that it started out that it was an extremely religious academy. It was about studying the glories of God and the universe. And then somehow or another, you got lost on the way.
Yeah.
You know?
You got replaced by us.
Yes. It is said that this material world is the perverted reflection of the spiritual world. So unless there is variegatedness in the spiritual world, how can there be temporary variegatedness in the material world? That one can transcend this material world does not imply that there is no transcendental variegatedness. You know, it's just like if you have a bad situation and you're in a room, it's not that a good situation means there are no rooms. It just means that there's a room where the things are nice, right? Brahmaji condemns very vehemently the condition of the human being who does not take interest in the personality of Godhead and his transcendental abode, Vaikuntha. The human form of life is described even by Brahmaji, or desired even by Brahmaji. Brahma and other demigods have much better material bodies than human beings. Yet the demigods, including Brahma, nevertheless desire to attain the human form of life, because it is specifically meant for the living entity who can attain transcendental knowledge and religious perfection. Right? Because we're looking for that ideal material situation, but that ideal material situation, where's the time to do what you really want to do? Right? I mean, it's just like, you see, someone has a bad material situation, right? They're so busy just trying to make ends meet that there's no extra time. Mm-hmm. Right? And then the people who are very wealthy and well-situated socially and politically, they're so busy that they have no time. Right? Mm-hmm. So it's just the general human being in the middle, they have the time. Right? So that's why Brahmaji and the demigods, they would like to be humans because they don't have to worry about it. It's just, you have to worry about, you know, if the demons are taking over the universe and, you know, and things like that. You know, you don't have to worry about that. So they're always busy with that. You know, the guy's eyelids are blinking properly. You know? You know, that's what you do all day. You know, you're busy.
A lot of eyelids.
Yeah. Like that.
So here, actually, only the four sampradayas are left now. When Brahmaji does not take interest in the personality or his transcendental abode, not even just
Vedic
void, but yeah.
No, because void and it is kicked out. Because technically, impersonalism and voidism is one thing. It's not technically Vedic. Vedic will be that it's that understands the three features, but they're not interested. So then actually being interested, that's the
point.
So that's why it said Vedic culture superior, because then you're in a context.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
It's just like any common person in India, most uneducated, you know, unsophisticated person understands about astrology or all these different kinds of things.
Yes.
They may not know much detail, but they know as much detail as any common Western New Agey person. How much do they know?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm a, you know, they say, I'm a Jupiterian, you know, so, well, what are you? Oh, I'm this. Oh, that means this. You know, and that's it. That's the end of their knowledge. But it keeps them going in conversation. You know, you understand what I'm saying? So, that's the difficulty, is that it's normal here, but there it's like, you know, you consider so intelligent, so sophisticated because you're New Agey. But every Indian is New Agey. So, wouldn't that make this culture superior?
Yeah, you'd think so.
Right? And the only reason it's superior, not because it's Indian, it's because it's based on the Veda.
Yes.
That's all. So it's the Veda that's special. And then anything that we do find in the world that is of value, it's because it is in pursuit of those principles of the Veda, whether known or unknown. Is that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Side question. From this description, it makes it sound as if the demigods, are they outside of the 400,000 species of human life? Or?
No, they're within, but it means human life here.
Okay.
You know, the species that are here. Because there's plenty of species here, but these ones are meant for, you know, and that generally means the civilized ones who are following the Vedic culture. Right? So then in the modern scenario, that basically means devotees. Like that. Though you do have pious people who are following anyway, but they're not getting the full benefit because they don't want to hear about the glories of the Lord. So in that way, they're just. It means, in other words, you know, they're how do I say, their ride to hell is in a good quality brass bucket, right? You know, instead of just, you know, an iron one that's got a hole in it. You know?
Brass bucket means a proper iron.
Yes, like that. So another, yes, that element, just that following the Vedic culture. And so then that's human life. But within that, that now we can see as Brahma, is that they're interested in human life as devotees. That's why Prabhupada said the demigods are standing in line to take birth in the families of devotees. Because that's the human birth that's of value. Because the other one, it's nice, but then you'll end up back in the heavenly planets again. The whole idea of being part of the mission here is that you can go back to Godhead. It is not possible to go back to Godhead in one life, but in the human form, one should at least understand the goal of life and begin Krishna consciousness. It is said that the human form is a great boon because it is the most suitable boat for crossing over the nations ocean. The spiritual master is considered to be the most able captain in the boat. Like as a boat, if you want to get somewhere, you have to have a captain to guide the boat, so you know where you're going. Otherwise, you go around in circles, it's not great. And the information from the scriptures is the favorable wind for floating over the ocean of nations. The human being who does not take advantage of all these facilities in this life is committing suicide. Therefore, one who does not begin Krishna consciousness in the human form of life loses his life to the influence of the illusory energy. Brahma regrets the situation of such a human being. 24 per point. Right? So the human life is then the perfect. Yes.
Why did you say that it is not possible to go back to Godhead in one life?
Because you're going to be accumulating piety over many births. Does that make sense?
It's not possible to accumulate it.
Generally, you don't see. It's just like you go down the street doing Hari Nam. How many people come back with you to the temple? Right? So therefore, and you're going down this, like I said, they go down and the businessman's seen you for years. Then eventually, you know, what's going on? But whether, you know, then it's of interest, but whether he develops faith, that's another thing. So once you develop faith, and then take up the sampradayic practice of Krishna consciousness, then you can do it. That is that one, that's the end of a whole. In other words, if we're, that we've taken up devotional service now means we've been exposed to devotional service previously. Like that.
Yes.
Because the point is taking, getting Shraddha in the process means that's a lot of Ajnata Sukriti. You know, we're just taking, it's just some ordinary, you know, just it happens, yeah. But that's because of Prabhupada's potency, that he's able to make something so rare, so seemingly common.
So we think of Anacchandavritti as the big one, but actually Shraddha is...
No, because once you get the Shraddha, then the whole process works. Because before that, then it's not. That's the... Because Prabhupada said, prema is mature Shraddha.
Yeah.
So it's that faith. That faith that just by serving Krishna, pleasing Krishna, that's the best thing to do. So that's the... Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's why we want to expose people as much as possible to Krishna consciousness, even though it might seemingly be embarrassing. You know, but by that, by the Harinam, by book distribution, prasad distribution, by kirtans, by whatever it is you can expose, the idea is to expose people to the process. By doing that for a long time, then, you know, it's just like, let us say, okay, you're doing some programs, you do kirtan in the yoga studio, okay? Now, a lot of people come, they like to come. But if you look around, they're singing nicely, but this and that. Some are just sitting and doing their meditation. They like the environment while the kirtan's going on. Some like it because it makes them feel and all that. But it's not necessarily that very many want to actually practice seriously Krishna consciousness. You understand? Why? Because they're getting enough of Jata Sukriti, they like to be in contact, but not enough to develop faith. So once they generate faith, now that's the special thing. That's why you want to make it as available as possible. So that's why this whole idea just fit in. Then what? Okay, if I fit in, who gets the benefit?
Nobody.
Yeah, that's the real thing. But what's my motive?
Me. Myself.
Myself, yeah. But like Madhu said, who gets the benefit? Nobody. So you don't really get benefit, no one else gets benefit. So it's not by fitting in, because who wants to fit into, you know, a bunch of rats in a rat race? You know? That's the whole thing.
And people appreciate. I mean, when they see you are okay with not fitting in, then they will listen to what you say, because they wish they were that comfortable with.
Yeah, that's the whole point. Is people are just not comfortable with themselves, and they're looking for role models to be comfortable with. Unfortunately, the role models aren't worth following. Okay. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur.
Thakurin.
His
sister.
Thakurin. His purports. Okay. To verse 24 and 25 describes the devotees with material desires and pure devotees. Oh, those of human birth are qualified to go to Vaikuntha and not the devatas. But those humans whose intelligence is misled by scriptures devoid of bhakti are cheated. They are lamentable. If we were born as humans in Bharata, then worshipping Krishna, we could attain Vaikuntha very quickly. Those who attain human life desired by us, Brahma and others, in which there is knowledge along with Dharma, they do not perform worship of the Lord, are bewildered by the Lord's Maya. So here the first lamentable position, I mean, of course, before, we've already taken it, that someone not interested in the Vedic literature, then that's going to be the most difficult situation. But those who are interested in the Vedic version, so they're practicing human life, they're following Dharma. So on that human platform, they're situated as humans. But unfortunately, if they're not interested in God consciousness and worshipping the Lord, then all that good piety is lost. Because if you're not following for God consciousness, what are you following for?
Sense gratification.
Sense gratification. So where is sense gratification going to lead you? Right? The opposite direction of Dharma. I mean of moksha, right? So more into material energy. So the most pious person at some point is going to entangle themselves more and more in material sense gratification. So then it's all lost. Yes.
We hear sometimes that we have scriptures in the lower modes that are used to bring people closer.
Yes, it is to bring closer. But the thing is unless they have a qualified guru to do that, then how do you know what to do? The favorable wind is there. Mm-hmm. But for someone who knows how to, sail a boat, you can go towards the wind or away from the wind.
Yes.
You can go any direction you want with the wind. So without the captain, then where is that wind going to take you?
Yes.
So here is then, even knowing all these nice things, if it's not in connection with God consciousness, it's a waste, it's a loss. Mm-hmm. So this idea of, being pious is good. Oh, they're nice people. Yes, it's great. They're good, they're nice people. Another Krishna says in Gita, it's the nice people that are generally going to take up Krishna consciousness. Right?
Yeah.
And except amongst the Malechas and Yavanas, it just gets so bad that they don't know what to do, so as an alternative, they could take up Krishna consciousness. Right?
Yeah.
So that way then you have, you end up with five options.
Yeah.
for pious and, you know, the narrow window of the impious. Right?
Rock bottom.
Yes, rock bottom. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I guess you get down so low that Krishna consciousness starts looking good.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. Okay. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing that sometimes is hard to understand, is that we're saying that just being pious is not enough. It's not that we're not interested in pious behavior. That's the standard human culture, is pious, proper dealings and everything. But it's not that just being nice is perfection. We have to understand is being nice is just what you're supposed to do. Just like, let's say, the kids are in the classroom. They're all nice. They're all well-behaved, right? But they learn nothing.
Yes.
Would we say it's a successful class? No. But they're nice. You know? So being nice and not learning anything is better than being not nice and not learning anything. Better is to learn something. Right? So that's the thing, is that the human life, the piety, when we speak strongly about the piety or the varnashram, it's only because people get distracted from Krishna consciousness by it. So we have to be careful of that. Otherwise, then, you know, we waste our time. Of those who take human life in which they perform dharma and jnana and not your worship are also bewildered. Or another meaning is, they do not give the Lord his worship. They do not perform actions for his pleasure. They are devotees with material desires. Let you get it in between. Oh, they do not give... Now, those who are qualified are described. Right? So you understand here is that the qualified, the pure devotee, that's very clear. But now, what's in between the gross materialist and pure devotion, that's where both the materialists and ourselves fit in.
Yes.
So the same... Do you understand? So the same comments we make about the materialists, we can make about the mixed devotee.
Yes.
At the same time, is any devotee is unique and special. So all it is just in pursuance of cultivating pure devotion, then that's where we point out these points. Because mixed means there's materialism there. So materialism is materialism. Right? Means I have a small pile of dirt in the middle of my living room. Or I have a big pile of dirt in middle of the living room. But the point is there's a pile of dirt in the middle of the living room.
Yes.
Right? Yes, you could say, but it's a small pile of dirt. Yes, it is. But pure devotion means no pile of dirt. You know, does that make sense? Yeah. Now those who are qualified to ascribe, those who, by following the Lord, best among the devatas, are far beyond rules, or who discard the process of Astanga Yoga, are superior to us, because their position is desired by us, but cannot be attained by us. So, in other words, when we say beyond the rules, it doesn't mean... See, we shouldn't use beyond the rules means I don't follow any rules. Because what is my point in my materialistic view? I don't want to follow any rules because I want to do what I want. I want to be independent.
Yeah.
So that's not what it means. It means that the rules aren't being followed because it's not that the rule is important. It's pleasing the Lord's important. Does that make sense? If I go into the kitchen and try to cook something nice for Krishna, then I just call it devotional service. Right? Even though I may be very technically following recipes, this and that, it's just seen from that point of view. Does that make sense? But if I get too much into the cooking process and forget that it's for the Lord, that's the distraction. Because a materialist who's really into cooking, they're really into the details, and I know there's not forgetting, they don't think about the Lord. So the devotee can fall into that same position, yes.
Is it something that you mentioned the previous week, that women are more religious and men are more spiritual? And I didn't really... Is it related to this?
It does, because when it says karma and gyan, it would be the feminine nature tends more towards karma. The masculine nature tends more towards gyan. Right? Does that make sense? Because you'll see, let's say, the pessimistic nature in a woman would not be considered natural. Right? There'd always be that ideal and that if you can do the right thing, that will make everything wonderful. Right? The man tends to have more of a pessimistic mood. It doesn't matter what you do, nothing works out. Does that make sense? So you have that tendency with karma and gyan. So gyan then gives rise to that analytical understanding of the difference between matter and spirit. You know, from that analytical point of view. Does that make sense? The feminine is just, it's a matter of religiosity, it's a matter of material religiosity or spiritual religiosity. But the principles, religiosity will be practiced. So if the spiritual is available, that will be done. If it's not available, the other will be done. Right? So that's why when you have the combination, then it becomes strong. Because one has to perform an activity, because the men will tend to not do activity, so the women inspire them to do that. Right? But the men, because of the analytical, then it's inspired. If you're going to do activity, you know, then it'll be spiritual. Does that make sense? Like that. So that combination is the strong. Okay? Another version has dure hum. This means they discard the ego. What is their character? The proof of their character is described. Because of experience of taste, through talking with mundane affection about the Lord, they show ecstatic symptoms. Mutual, not mundane. I say, how did they get the mundane there? Okay. Because of experience of taste, through talking with mutual affection about the Lord, they show ecstatic symptoms. In Puranas and other scriptures, one sometimes hears that there is some momentary appearance of demons in the spiritual world. But this should not be considered actually entrance into the spiritual world, since they lack realizations of spiritual happiness. Because they, in other words, they come into the spiritual world, but there's no spiritual happiness there, so they're technically not in the spiritual world. Right? Is that what it says? It's interesting is that if you bring up that there's multi-dimensions within the universe, people are perfectly happy with it, as long as science. If you say that you can have the spiritual world and the material world at the same time, then it's a matter of, hey, wait a minute.
Yeah. It's all a matter of, am I in control or not?
Yeah.
If I'm in control, I can accept anything.
Oh, okay, yeah. But if I'm...
God's in control.
Yeah, so, in other words, it's the mentality that places you in the spiritual and material world. Like that. You know, it's just like you have open society, and you have the good people. You also have bad people. So when the bad people are caught, they're put into a situation that matches their bad mentality. Right? You know, very hard to steal, you know, things from a prison because they're all bolted down. Right? You know, so it perfectly matches the mentality. You like to take things, okay, well, you put into a place where there's nothing to take. You know, you can't even take the doorknobs, right? They don't have them, you know. Yes.
So sometimes mentality doesn't match the situation, but it's just a matter of time when
When it does, yes. It's just a matter of time. Because the gross always follows the subtle. So if our mentality is mundane, it's just a matter of time before the mundane situation comes. Same way as if our mentality is spiritual, it's just a matter of time before that situation. Right. So here it says, this is also, point is that it appears. There's momentary appearance of demons in this spiritual world. Right, so because there's that idea is there can be no bad things in the spiritual world. So you can't fall from the spiritual world because there is nothing bad there. But we just said demons will walk into the spiritual world. So it means there can be, but it means someone who has that technically is not there. Like that. Yes?
We say that gross follows the subtle, but some would say, well, subtle also follows the gross. Mm-hmm. If you put someone in jail, they will develop a criminal mentality.
Well, that's because they already have a criminal mentality. Means it's just like you can only draw out something that's there.
Okay.
Let's say someone has a business mentality, though immature.
Mm-hmm.
You put them in a business environment, what will happen?
Yeah, they will.
They will develop.
Yeah.
What happens if you take someone who has no business acumen?
He will run the company into the ground.
Yeah, and you put him in that situation. It doesn't matter what. Yeah. He won't be able to do it. So, he can be engaged by a businessman.
Yeah.
Do you understand?
Yeah. Thank you.
Like that.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. You can't take some... If I have a glass and there's nothing in it, I can't get anything out of it.
Yeah. Is that...
Sometimes tigers or bears enter into the jewel-covered palace of the king, endowed with various fragrances. For amusement, the king desires that the populace see those animals. Right? So when the demons come into Vrindavan, Krishna, for fun, then wants the Brajvasis to see, you know, like that. Similarly, the Supreme Lord, for fun, by his will, brings material objects, ferocious demons, saintly persons like Bhrigu, or persons beyond the three gunas, such as the Kumaras, to Vaikuntha, to show them the inhabitants of the spiritual world, and then quickly takes them away as is suitable to his purpose. But he brings his pure devotees to Vaikuntha through his association on airplanes, and has them reside there eternally. He has them taste the sweet abode, sweet service, and sweet pastimes. Okay. Okay, ferocious demons, saintly persons like Bhrigu, right? So in other words, just the demons, the pious, and the jnanis. They may come in contact with Vaikuntha, but they're there for a purpose, and then they go.
Mm-hmm.
But the devotees, then Krishna brings there, and they permanently stay there. Right? So that means that the spiritual, by the influence of the Tathasta Shakti, then you can have materialists come in contact with the spiritual world. But it'll always be temporary.
Yeah.
Yes.
Very nice example with Vaishnava Chakravarti Thakur here. He's talking about these two readings of the verse, and he just explains how they both support Krishna consciousness rather than, oh, look, some interpolation.
Yes. You just have to know enough. See, that's the difficulty, is that the acharyas have an advantage. They didn't learn Sanskrit from Monier Williams. Right? They actually know the grammar. That's why our preferred system... See, it's like the Vedic system is, you know the grammar, so you know technically how it works and how it transforms, even if it's in a basic way. Then you understand the workings of the language. While the modern system approach to the Sanskrit grammars, you just know the mechanics that this does that. So you know how to look in the dictionary, get the words, and then you can basically function. But because they don't actually know what's going on, their depth of appreciating the language is not enough. Therefore, then it falls short. So then you'll get interpolation, because each one will, according to their degree of understanding, will have some slightly different. But for the acharyas, because they know that these words follow this path back to these roots, then you can get all these different meanings. I mean, it's just like you have a tree. It's got one root, but it has many branches and many... So it's not that the flower on this side is the real flower and the one on that side is an interpolation. You know, it's you know, and then every day the kids have to go out and look for which one's the real flower, you know. You know, and then he brings his basket happily to the pujari, sits them down, the pujari looks at it and goes, "What, another basket of interpolated flowers?" You know, so it's so that's why the Vedic approach is slightly different. Because it's not about the mechanics of it, it's about the understanding of it. Because in the modern Sanskrit, it's not for understanding, it's just for dealing. But in the Vedic, it's to enhance understanding. So that's why you'd want to know the grammar, and you'd want to know obscure usages of the word. Then you can do it. It's just like, let's say, you take poetics. Then they much of the time use the words in a very obscure way, or they put them in a different order. You know? And you're just like that. And that's what brings out the taste. Like that.
Embellishment.
So, yeah, that's the embellishment. So that's the idea of the Vedic. It enhances, refines the Vedic, you know, intellect because of all this, you know, it's more eclectic. It has a wider range. You can go deeper like that. Does that make sense? So that's why then that method is used. Though it seems like it's more trouble, but you get more from it once you catch it. So he has them taste the sweet abode, sweet service, and sweet pastime. So that's the general principle in the whole spiritual world, right? But now, it's a matter of the sweetness of this. Is it based on sweetness or based on majesty? Mm-hmm. It's not that there's no sweetness in Vaikuntha, it's just sweetness based on majesty. So sweetness is tasted, it's just the medium you use to taste that. So when it's done through majesty, it won't be as intense when sweetness is based on sweetness.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yes.
And not?
Yes.
And so what is the qualification to be able to taste the sweetness?
It would be the... This means they discard the ego. Because of experience of taste, you're talking with mutual affection about the Lord. Right? So there's that, or another, they do not give the Lord his worship, they do not perform actions for his pleasure. So it'll be the opposite. He worship the Lord and do it to please him. So in other words, pure devotional service will generate this taste. Because ruchi means that it's you're getting taste, but taste will come because there's stableness. Does that make sense? Right? If there's steadiness, then there'll be taste. But steadiness means that one's performing regular worship for the Lord's pleasure, because it's free from anartha. Right? Or at least predominantly free. Probably say 75%, then that's solid. You know? You can say 60%, then that's just starting. But you'll generally take what's in the middle as the real thing. Because the beginning and the ends are similar to the other. It means the beginning of Nishta will be similar to Anartha Nivritti, and the end of Nishta will be like the beginning of Ruchi. Right? So the middle, so that's why you say 75%, that's the middle. Right? 60 may be the beginning, and then, you know, like this, but it's 75, then you can say it's solid. So a quarter is still there of Anartha, but it's not the prominence. Therefore, then the stableness is there, and by that continued stableness, then taste comes.
Mm-hmm. And this is the indication of a qualified.
Yes, that's there's a taste for doing it. You like doing it. See, at least there's the intellectual acceptance that this is good to do, so I want to do it. Yes. You know, it's like taking health food. You know, intellectually, you know, this is great. You know, yeah. But yeah, you know,
it stops there.
Yeah. Does that make sense? So, but then with time, then there actually is a taste for it. Does that make sense? You know, so like we're making this, you know, as a joke, but someone who after 30 years is still following that because they have a taste for it. They, you know, brewer's yeast does taste good to them. You know, okay. You know, so that they remain. But the others, then it was just, you know, something to do, you know, intellectually caught their attention, and then they do something else. That's why it's said that one should not remain on that platform of Artha, Arthati, or Jigyasu. Right? Because those ones, it may wane. The interest. If the problem goes, the anxiety goes away, the you know, wealth or facility comes or knowledge is gained, one may go away. But if he's a jnani, then he actually wants to know the Lord. Right? So then he'll stick. Then he'll mature into someone who it's not about wanting to know the Lord, but wanting to please the Lord. So the jnani is glorious amongst the neophytes because it's about the Lord. not about his problem, but it's about his knowing the Lord rather than pleasing the Lord. You understand? But it's connected to the Lord, so it's glorious. Is that?
It is the first step.
It's the first step. But the point is it's a real step.
Yes.
Right there. Okay. Verses 26 to 36. The sages are obstructed and curse the gatekeepers. So first we are establishing just, because if you want to have something happen, you establish the scene.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. In verses 26 to 37, Brahmad... Oh, we just read that, didn't we?
No.
We didn't.
No.
Yeah. Oh, okay. It's just in the same place because I thought it just read it. Brahma describes how the four Kumaras were stopped by the two gatekeepers at the seventh gate of Vaikuntha. The Kumaras were enraged by the discordant mentality of the gatekeepers. They cursed these guards for seeing enemies in a place where no enemies could exist. Thus, the gatekeepers were condemned to fall into the material world. Accepting the curse, the gatekeepers fell at the Brahmana's feet, expressing their fear of forgetting the Lord. Right, so that was their anxiety. It wasn't so much about going to the material world, it was about forgetting the Lord by going there.
It was not right? About the social position.
Yes, not about the social or that the facilities aren't as great. It's about forgetting about the Lord. That's the main. Quote, the great sages, Sanaka, Sanatana, Sananda, and Sanat Kumar, upon reaching the above-mentioned Vaikuntha in the spiritual world, by dint of their mystic yoga performance, perceived unprecedented happiness. Right? So here's a case of jnanis entering Vaikuntha.
Yeah.
Right? They found that the spiritual sky was illuminated by highly decorated airplanes, piloted by the best devotees of Vaikuntha, and was predominated by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishwaguru, footnote 5. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks, the phrase Guru of the Universe also indicates that he brought them to Vaikuntha to teach them bhakti. Okay. After passing through the six entrances of Vaikuntha Puri, the Lord's residence, without feeling astonishment at all the decorations, they saw at the seventh gate two shining beings of the same age, armed with maces and adorned with most valuable jewelry, earrings, diamonds, helmets, garments, etc. So they're not impressed by it because it's for them everything's transcendental. So they're experiencing the happiness of understanding the transcendental. Right? So it doesn't matter what is the particular variegatedness of the transcendental. It's about that is the taste that they're getting. So that makes sense.
Yes.
That's why they're jnanis?
That's why they're jnanis, yeah. Because it's only that much. Right? So the Brahmananda that they're getting, so it can be anything. So that's why for them, everything being Brahman, so variety is not a problem. Mm-hmm. But it's not that the variety itself is attractive, but it's not that they don't accept it. Mayavadis are ones that they don't accept it. That's why we say technically they're Buddhists. They're not actually impersonalists. I mean, it's a variety. But they're voidists, not actually.
They always say that this is the product of their conditioning, kind of. Because whatever you're attracted to, or whatever you inspire to, that's coming from your previous whatever.
Okay. You mean, so that's for the impersonalists, or for the, you're saying the four Kumaras?
I wouldn't say four Kumaras.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure. Yes, for the Gyan, it'll be coming from there. Because there's that element that you really want to be God, the supreme controller and enjoyer, but you can't, so you take up the negative. Because the Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out, your positivism is that I can prosper. You know? Your pessimism is, it doesn't matter, you can prosper, it's still not going to work out. You know what I'm saying? So the tendency is that the more intellectual will tend to be more pessimistic. Right? And then, you know, general person may be more positive. But so that's the So karma, then there's an idea, I can work, I can get. Pessimism is that I can work, but what I'll get still won't be that great. Right? So then, Seth? The two doormen were garlanded with fresh flowers, which attracted intoxicated bees, and which were placed around their necks and between their four blue arms. From their arched eyebrows, discontented nostrils, and reddish eyes, they appeared somewhat agitated. The great sages, headed by Sanaka, had opened doors everywhere. They had no idea of ours and theirs. With open mind, they entered the seventh door out of their own will, just as they had passed through the six other doors. So their own will is not that they're bound by the modes of nature, that's why they're going through, just that they're free from the modes, and they just wanted to go through the door. Right? So they're not thinking, this is yours, this is mine. So then, you know, and especially, you know, mine, because they don't have anything, right? They don't even have clothes, these guys. You know, so it's not, and they don't seem to be affected by the weather either, so that's it. Yeah, that's the. Yeah, Prabhupada said that, that, you know, previous ages, the Naistika Brahmacharis, they could just lay down on the on the veranda and you know, go to sleep even in winter, and they wouldn't feel cold like that. So, four kumaras of that kind of category. So, and so therefore, since there's none of ours, there's not going to be anything of theirs. Right? Everything is all transcendental. Everything's Brahman. So therefore. You know, it's not that your Brahman, my Brahman's better than your Brahman. You know, like that. Ah. Out of their own will, just they entered the seventh door out of their own will, just as they passed through the other six doors, which are made of gold and diamonds. 26:29. That's just the door.
Yeah.
So if the door is that, you know, you can imagine the rest of it must be pretty good. Srila 26-29. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains the reason for the agitation of the gatekeepers. Without asking the two gatekeepers who are watching, disrespecting them, they entered the seventh door whose bolts were made of diamonds and whose panels were made of gold, as were the previous doors. Now that's a door.
That's a door.
The bolts, you know, yeah. all the because you have the wood, and then you have all the, you know, what do you call it?
Hardware,
yeah. So here is the door is made out of solid gold, and all the hardware is diamonds.
Yeah.
Right? And gold is heavy, so that means the hardware has to be quite big. You know, so it's like, you know, you'd have, you know, yeah, that would be pretty. That'd be
we
amazing.
Can get that for TOVP.
Yeah, yeah. Just have to go visit, you know.
Brahmaloka.
Huh? Yeah, Brahmaloka. That's good. Yeah, that's probably better. You probably get more out of that than out of Mr. Buffett, right?
Yeah.
They did not ask because of their nature. Without anyone able to stop them going anywhere, they used to wander everywhere. So the doorkeepers are used to everyone who's coming through is going to at least acknowledge that they exist. But for the four Kumaras, they everything's the same for them, so it's all transcendental. So they go anywhere they like and as they please.
Yeah.
And because they're, you know, they're the senior most, other than Brahma, basically in the universe, like that, then, you know, they're the oldest, actually. Brahma and then them, then everybody else. So they're the oldest other than Brahma in the universe. So everybody basically doesn't have a problem. But in Vaikuntha, then they've been there eternally, yeah, so then so. It's a bit, they're a bit older. So they expect some, you know, some respect here. Right. Yes.
So it wasn't actually fault on their part.
No, it wasn't on
their
part. It's in one sense it's not, but at the same time is they're not recognizing their transcendental position. Because otherwise sages and that come through, because the devotees in Shantaras may behave like this. Right, those in Dasyaras, they'd be more interactive. But in Vaikuntha, every morning when the gates open, then all these devotees, and we'll see that with Gopakumar, in Dasyaras and Santaras will be coming in. But I guess most of them interact, but the four Kumaras, they're also the kids, so they, you know, they don't care. Kids go anywhere. The kids just see a door. They walk through it. It's not that they, you know, hey, can I walk through this door? No, that doesn't happen. Can I pick this up off the floor and put it in my mouth? Is that okay? No, they don't do that. Right? So in one sense, it's not. But in another sense, they should have recognized their position. But we understand from the past that it was the Lord's will. That's why it happened this way. At the same time, as in Vaikuntha, why should they get angry and curse? Right? So all this shouldn't have happened, but it did, because the Lord, you know, it was his desire.
Also, you can see from this pastime that Kumaras, basically, they didn't have any, like, spiritual experience before. They are the eldest in the material world, but right. Not in Vaikuntha.
That's a good point, yes. Yes. So this is their first experience in Vaikuntha. So then that person, because they don't know about the personal aspect. They've heard about it.
Yeah.
But in the material world, it doesn't matter, because everything there is, you know, generally is all, what do you call it? Social. And so if they're sitting on top of Loka talking to the sages, you don't have to worry about all these kind of things. There'll be some basic thing. If they walk in, probably the others will stand up. They'll give them a place to sit. So there is some etiquette. But this etiquette, you know, so walking into, let's say, a king's palace, they just walk in and say, please, no one bothers them because they're sages, like that. But here then, Vaikuntha, yes, they have no experience because they haven't actually come to the Bhagavan platform yet. Yeah. Okay. Verse 29, according to Srila Prabhupada's purport, describes the childlike nature of the four Kumaras in entering everywhere unrestrictedly. The great sages, namely Sanaka, Sanatana, Sanandana, and Sanat Kumar, although very old in years, maintained themselves eternally as small children. They were not at all duplicitous, and they entered the doors exactly like little children enter places without any idea of what it is to trespass. So that was also. So those things could be considered. Because then it's very easy. If you're looking that nothing's yours and nothing's anybody else's, because it's all transcendental, what better position to take than that of a child? You know? Because otherwise, if you're an adult, then sometimes there's a consideration of these things. But as a child, then... You know. That is a child's nature. A child can enter any place, and no one checks him. Indeed, a child is generally welcome in his attempts to go places. But if it so happens that a child is checked from entering a door, he naturally becomes very sorry and angry, right? They get insulted immediately.
Yes.
You know, they want to put their finger in the socket. No,
yes.
They get very upset.
Yes.
What? This is a very valid occupation. Why am I being stopped in my natural occupation? I'm simply trying to explore my universe. You know, like that. That is the nature of a child. In this case, the same thing happened. The childlike saintly personalities entered all the six doors of the palace, and no one checked them. Therefore, when they attempted to enter the seventh door and were forbidden by the doormen, who checked them with their sticks, they naturally became very angry and sorrowful. An ordinary child would cry, but because these were not ordinary children, they immediately made preparations to punish the doormen, for the doormen had committed a great offense.
Being Prabhupada, they should have seen everything same.
Yeah.
So permitted or not permitted?
No, but it's not that there's not, because they are functioning, it's not that there's basic etiquettes and all that. Because they amongst themselves, amongst the sages, they follow etiquette. Yeah. But it's here. Why would you? You're going into a Kshatriya environment. Why wouldn't they, as you know, Brahmins, be able to go? And not also their kids. And it's one thing if they come to the first gate and they said, "Hari Bol, you know, where you got kids going, you know, like that. You know. Your mom's not calling you." You know. But they went through six gates, and it's at the seventh only they were stopped. So if they were stopped at the first, then it would be okay, then they'd have to explain, and then they'd go through. So here we see is from both points of view, neither of them are technically at fault. Because the four Kumaras are transcendentalists and acting and like children. So they go anywhere at will. And the gatemen were just, you know, they're there to guard the gate, and they're not even being noticed. So then, you know. Yes?
Also, there's... previous gaze that they were doorkeepers.
Yes.
So we don't, we're not sure whether they were there or not.
No, they're generally, yes. So there's, as, so there's 40, what is it? No, 28 pairs of doorkeepers.
28 pairs.
Yeah. Because you have four gates and seven, you know, walls. So then, but Jaya and Vijaya are considered the main of all of them. But each one of them, they all have names. So, I mean, I don't, you know, we don't get into it. Jaya and Vijaya is as far as we go. But you get into the Vaikuntha Sampradaya, so they can tell you these other names. They all, Chanda, Prachanda, there's all these. Sometimes when you do like the installations and all that, then you do up Jaya and Vijaya's wall, you do all eight of them. Hmm. Like that. You don't do the other six gates. Brahma continues, the four boy sages who had nothing to cover their bodies but the atmosphere looked only 5 years old, even though they were the oldest of all living creatures and had realized the truth of the self. But when the porters, who happened to possess a disposition quite unpalatable to the Lord, saw the sages, they blocked their way with their staves, despising their glories, although the sages did not deserve such treatment at their hands. So then here's then the fault, because the sages should have been treated with more respect, right? So just because they didn't notice them at the gate is not actually a position to not to behave improperly. So we can see is this whole thing, which, and that, how would that happen in Vaikuntha? So we understand it must be the Lord's arrangement. When the Kumaras, although by far the fittest persons, were thus forbidden entrance by the two chief doorkeepers of Sri Hari, while other divinities looked on, their eyes suddenly turned red because of anger, due to their great eagerness to see their most beloved master, Sri Hari, the personality of Godhead. Right? It's not that they're on the platform of Bhagavan realization, but they know about the Supreme Lord and know about his, you know, position as the Supreme Brahman. So then they want to see the Lord. The sages said, who are these two persons who have developed such a discordant mentality, even though they are posted in the service of the Lord, in the highest position are expected to have developed the same qualities of the Lord? How are these two persons living in Vaikuntha? Where is the possibility of an enemy is coming into the kingdom of God? Because here is that they're sages. If they were a demon, then naturally then it is their position. Right? But the point is they're not. So then they're... The Supreme Personality of Godhead has no enemy. Who can be envious of him? Probably these two persons are imposters. Therefore, they suspect others to be like themselves. So they're not actually transcendentalists, so they think everybody else is not. Yeah. 30 to 32. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his purport to verse 30 and 32, explains, seeing those jnanis, those Brahma jnanis, the door gatekeepers prevented them from entering by placing their sticks horizontally in front and saying, do not enter the palace of the Lord. The Kumaras did not deserve to be stopped. Ignoring their greatness, the gatekeepers thought that the boys were proud because of their Brahmagyan. The gatekeepers thus showed natures unfavorable to the Lord. So they're thinking they're proud of their position on Brahmagyan. But then the Kumaras are pointing out that's because they have pride in their position. That's why they would see pride in others. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. Therefore, the pot calling the kettle black, example. The gatekeepers thus showed natures unfavorable to the Lord, who is affectionate to Brahmanas. Even the Lord's servants should not obstruct his friendliness to Brahmanas, because they follow the qualities of the Lord's mind. Because right? All the Brahminical lifestyle with the qualities that the Brahmins follow, that is the Lord's nature. So how the Lord thinks and how he likes to interact is how they are dealing. Does that make sense? That's the Brahminical culture. That's the position. So that's even just Brahmins, let alone realized Brahmins who are Vaishnavas. Right? So if a Brahmin becomes realized a Vaishnav, that means the Vaishnav culture is based on the Brahminical culture that's based on the Lord's mentality. Right?
Yes.
Being virtuous, the Kumaras should not have been punished. Because they were afflicted with anger, they first criticized the doorkeepers. Quote, among those who have qualities similar to the Lord's, living close to the Lord, what is this irregular nature of stopping brahmanas from entering in opposition to the Lord's nature? But enemies of the Lord disguised as brahmanas try to enter Vaikuntha by deceit. We should question them first and then allow them to enter. No, you two are deceitful, pretending to be devotees. You are enemies of the Lord, showing disrespect for brahmanas, lack of peace, and a fighting nature. No one else but you should be distrusted by the Lord. Thinking the whole world is like yourselves, Atmavat, you cheaters mistrust all others, but you alone are not trustworthy. Right, because their point is that enemies may be disguised as brahmanas, so then we want to check. So I guess this is also the first time they've seen the four Kumaras. Srila Prabhupada's purport to 31 touches on impersonal misconception that liberated persons should not become angry. In this verse, it is figuratively stated that the younger brother of desire suddenly appeared in person when the sages were forbidden to see their most beloved personality of Godhead. The younger brother of desire is anger. If one's desire is not fulfilled, the younger brother, anger, follows. Here we can mark that even great saintly persons like the Kumaras were also angry. But they were not angry for their personal interests. They were angry because they were forbidden to enter the palace to see the personality of Godhead. So they're forbidden in service. Right? Therefore, the theory that in the perfectional stage one should not have anger is not supported in this verse. Anger, yes, it's like, I don't know if any of you had the experience, but we used to get it before, is that you ride on the local trains, you know, the Calcutta, the Mayapur, and that, you know, because, you know, some of these people are sitting on the train every day, twice a day, for their whole life, they get a bit grumpy. So, and bored. And so for fun, then when a Westerner comes on the train, they start to harass. Yes. And then when you become angry, they go, you're a sadhu, why you're becoming angry? But first they'll harass you till you become angry. Right? So Prabhupada's dealing with this misconception here. Yes. Anger will continue even in the liberated state. These four mendicant brothers, the Kumaras, were considered liberated persons. But still they were angry because they were restricted in their service to the Lord. This point is very important. Sense activities continue even in the liberated stage. The difference is, however, that sense activities in liberation are accepted only in connection with Krishna consciousness. Whereas sense activities in the conditioned stage are enacted for personal sense gratification. So there's still is enacted for the Lord's pleasure. Therefore, when it's obstructed, there'll be anger. Right?
Yes. So when the guy on the train is harassing me, that means I can't read Bhagavad Gita. So I can become angry. Or
yeah.
Something
or just
like that.
They're saying all kinds of bogus philosophies. They, even though you don't believe it, they'll just say it just to get you angry. It's just, you know, it's part of the thing. This is the train pastimes. You know, what else do you do?
To lift your tila.
Huh?
To lift your tila. Is it Abhimanyu's mother?
Yeah, Jatila, yeah. They're like that. Just to add to the pastimes. Yeah. And that's 2 hours, then, let alone when you have 24 hours to Delhi. Right?
Yeah.
You know, that's that gets more serious.
I got that from Mumbai to Kolkata. I was in the... with just next to a family with a kid that just would not stop screaming. 36 hours. That was good.
Wow.
That was tolerance.
And you didn't have to pay to go to a concert.
No. Yeah. That's
it's good for brahmachari. You know?
Yeah, no, it's good preaching.
Then you can understand
this. Very effective preaching.
Yeah, this is family life.
Yeah, that's what it is.
It's you.
Yeah. Go more on the train.
Part of the training. The great sages continued. In the Vaikuntha world, there is complete harmony between the residents and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, just as there is complete harmony within space between the big and the small skies. Why is there a need of fear in this field of harmony? These two persons are dressed like inhabitants of Vaikuntha, but where from can their disharmony come into existence? Verse 33. Srila Prabhupada's purport states that this verse is often misconstrued by the Mayavadi philosophers. They interpret this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam to mean that the small sky and the big sky are one, but this idea cannot stand. The example of the big sky and the small sky is also applicable within a person's body. The big sky is the body itself, and the intestines and other parts of the body occupy the small sky. Each and every part of the body has individuality, even though occupying a small space, part of the total body. Similarly, the whole creation is the body of the Supreme Lord, and we created beings, or anything that is created, are but a small part of that body. The parts of the body are never equal to the whole. This is never possible. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that the living entities, who are parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, are eternally parts and parcels. Okay, so they're bringing out there's always harmony between the big skies and the small skies. So however you're applying it, there'll be the whole and there'll be the part, and there's always a harmony. Right? So Prabhupada's pointing out the Mayavadis try to take this and say, see, it's all one. It's all one. Right? According to the Mayavadi philosophers, the living entity in illusion considers himself part and parcel, although he is actually one and the same as the Supreme Whole. Right? So they're thinking, when I think of myself as an individual within the whole, then I'm an illusion.
Yes.
Right? Because then they're saying, then I am the whole. But then that doesn't make sense. You know, the part can't be the whole, but the part is part of the whole.
Okay. Hmm. But on the same basis that they think that they are part of the whole, if they think they are the whole, that this is the same faulty logic.
Yeah. That would just be the opposite. Because if one's false, why wouldn't the other be false?
Because it's based on their own speculative
ideas. Yes. Okay. The oneness of the whole and the part is in their quality. The qualitative oneness of the small and large portions of the sky does not imply that the small sky becomes the big sky. Right? So quantitative is different. Qualitative, there has to be the same. Just like the finger and the hand, there's a quality of the same. Because what the hand does, the finger also takes part in that. So qualitatively the same, though the finger is not as big as the hand. Right? There's no cause for the politics of divide and rule in the Vaikuntha planets. There is no fear because of the united interests of the Lord and the residents. So you don't have to use that beta to divide and conquer. Right? Because everybody's in tune with the Lord. So there is, therefore, no enemies. They're all thinking the same. The qualitative oneness of the small and large... Oh, okay. Maya means disharmony between the living entities and the Supreme Lord. And Vaikuntha means harmony between them. Actually, all living entities are provided for and maintained by the Lord because He is the supreme living entity. Just like, you know, the parts of your body are maintained by the whole body.
Yes.
But foolish creatures, although actually under the control of the supreme living entity, defy His existence, and that state is called Maya. Sometimes they deny that there is such a being as God. They say, everything is void. And sometimes they deny Him in a different way. There may be a God, but He has no form. Both these conceptions arise from the rebellious condition of the living entity. As long as this rebellious condition prevails, the material world will continue in disharmony. And so you can only bring it together when it's all based about the Lord. When it's about the Lord, then you can create harmony. There is no other way to create harmony. Right? Is that?
Yes.
Yeah, it's just like, let's say, just you're using the term harmony. Is that connected to the main note, right, or the first note, then all the other notes have harmony.
Yes.
But if they don't have a connection to the one note, it's just any seven random notes, it'll be disharmony.
Yeah.
Maharaj also brings out the point that there must be more than one
see the harmony.
Oh, okay.
This
yeah.
harmony means
yeah, there has
one.
There can't be one.
At least two.
Two. Yeah. 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 That's good.
Harmony or disharmony is realized because of the law and order of a particular place. Religion is the law and order of the Supreme Lord. In the Srimad Bhagavad Gita, we find that religion means devotional service or Krishna consciousness. Krishna says, give up all other religious principles and simply become a soul surrendered unto me. This is religion. Because right? Otherwise you have, it says harmony, disharmony, the law and order of a particular place. So even if you have a material place, it has its laws. And if that law and order is maintained, then there's harmony on that platform. Right? So that just being speculative or even being Vedic, that aspect of just the harmony of the elements that are there, that has to be given up for the harmony with the Lord.
Yes.
Right? That's the point. When one is fully conscious that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer and supreme Lord, and one acts accordingly, that is real religion. Because everything is there is connected to him. Otherwise, even the perfect follower of the Vedic culture, then they're seeing all these elements that are there, and they're following all the laws. But they're not seeing that this is the small sky connected to the big sky of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, technically, there's still disharmony, because they're not in harmony with the total. Right? Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Anything which goes against this principle is not religion. Right? It'll be upadharma or chalat, all these other things. Krishna therefore says, just give up all other religious principles. In the spiritual world, this religious principle of Krishna consciousness is maintained in harmony. And therefore that world is called Vaikuntha, right? Without distress, without anxiety. If the same principle can be adopted here, wholly or partially, then it is also Vaikuntha. Even partially it will create, I think what it was, there's something, I think Prabhupada said 1% of the planet was practicing Krishna consciousness. Mm-hmm. Then the whole environment would change. So it is with any society, such as the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. The members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, putting faith in Krishna as the center, live in harmony according to the order and principles of Bhagavad Gita. Then they are living in Vaikuntha, not in this material world.
Yes.
So that's the thing. Krishna is the center, so his teachings, the acharyas, then it all becomes very nice. The boat goes nicely. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on the same verse as follows. The great sages said, fools, please listen. Though those who you mistrust are within the Lord, for the whole universe is within him. The wise jnanis do not see difference between all jivas and the Lord here in Vaikuntha, who holds the jivas within him, just as the sky in the pot is within the great sky. For what reason do you, dressed as devotees, fear that someone will come and pierce the abdomen of the Lord? Please tell us that first. Actually, the consciousness of the jiva, with its nature of meager, dependent knowledge, differs from the consciousness of the Supreme Lord, endowed with unlimited auspicious qualities, such as his inherent omniscience, like the difference of heat derived from the sun. But the speakers were jnanis, in the line of jnanis. To achieve the perfection of liberation attained through non-dual knowledge, by identifying sameness of consciousness, while at the same time showing complete difference of the Lord and the jiva, who are conscious entities from matter. The example of the great sky used to explain the Lord and the jiva is not inappropriate for them. Right? For them, this is the proper logical understanding and perspective, because they are jnanis. So this is how jnanis will see the situation. But, remember, in Vaikuntha, because it's on the Bhagavan platform, therefore, again, all these seeming social interactions and everything comes in, but it's centered around the Lord. So that being reflected here, then we centered around ourselves, our family, our community, our nation, like this. And that creates the material problem.
But its origin is in the spiritual world. So the path of jnana is how one gets out of here by breaking it down and just making it all, you know, just non-different from the Lord. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So for their position and their realization, what they're saying is correct. And it is the path how to get to that platform. But already being on that platform, then it's not as important. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's why all these different perspectives are there. Only the Lord can balance all these things. That's why you need the complete whole. Otherwise, all these parts have to connect to the complete whole. Having done that, then it works very nicely. Right? Does that make sense? So one is connecting to the complete whole. The other is connecting to the complete whole. But they're not seeing how each other is connecting to the complete whole. Right? So then there's a discordance. Because it's not big enough. The sky is not big enough what they're looking at.
Right? This is a neophyte thing, not seeing how others connect.
Yes, yes. Even if you're one seeing and the one's connecting oneself,
yes.
One doesn't see how others, so that means one's understanding the Lord isn't actually as great as it could be. Because otherwise you'd see how they go together.
That you're unable to distinguish between your activity and activities of others.
No, you can distinguish. What you're doing is great, what everybody else is doing has some problem. So of course you can distinguish. Intelligence is there. You can the power of discrimination. The problem is the power to see the sameness, that's not cultivated. So that's generally where we have problem. And we avoid it in general, because then when it's oneness, then we go into the Mayavad, you know, concept. So that's why we see is that as we go in time, we can discuss the Brahman, Paramatman, Bhagavan platforms more comfortably. We can discuss the element of the oneness, because we know that that oneness is part of the greater, personalness of the Lord.
Yes.
Right. Well, if you bring this up too early, then because it's either it's personal or, you know, impersonal, and that impersonal is Maya because we're attached to it. Right? It's just like, you know, scriptures will say, family life is Maya.
Yes.
But we just read about how in Vaikuntha, everybody's married.
Yeah.
And this whole, you know, Grihastha social scene, yeah. Grihastha and Kshatriya social scene is going on. Not just the Brahminical scene, a Kshatriya scene. Right? So when we think of attachment, generally we think of Kshatriyas as attached. Right? You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like that. Vices are attached, but they just don't have the same facilities as the Kshatriyas do. Express their attachment. Shudra's less than that. You know, so if you want to hear about attachment, if you want to hear about facilities, you know, you want to hear about a Kshatriya's facilities. You want to hear about their emotions and the Kshatriyas. You know, the power and prowess and influence, Kshatriyas.
Yes.
Everybody has, but it's very less, right? And of the four ashrams, then which is the most, has all the widest variety and the fullness? It'll be the Grihastha. So therefore, Vaikuntha will be the Grihastha and the Kshatriya. Right? So whenever he's in the cities, it's always this, right? Because Vaikuntha is a city, right? That makes sense? Because then you have that greatness and that intensity that's there. But then in Vrindavan, it's the sweetness, so therefore the simplicity and all that is nice. Okay, we finish that. Okay, yeah, so we finished that part. So we'll stop here. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki,
Jai
Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktavinda ki,
Jai.
You forgot the Hare Krishna.
Yes.
Om
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama.